In this week's GenCast, Gen's Editor-in-Chief John Sterling talks with astrobiologist Lynn Harper from NASA, who's going to discuss commercial biotechnology opportunities in space. First up, the news of the week.
Researchers at Purdue University have discovered that the choroid plexus apparently plays a critical role in preventing the accumulation of a protein associated with Alzheimer's disease. The researchers found that the choroid plexus acts as a sort of fishnet that captures beta amyloid and prevents it from building up in the cerebrospinal fluid. This newly uncovered pathway may help explain how normal brains balance this protein and how an imbalance caused by aging or genetic or environmental factors may lead to or worsen Alzheimer's disease. The City of Hope Cancer Center received a $20 million grant from the Arnold and Mabel Beckman Foundation. The grant will establish the Arnold and Mabel Beckman Center for Cancer Immunotherapeutics and Tumor Immunology, a research center dedicated to immunotherapy. Groundbreaking for the five-story, 108,000-square-foot center is scheduled for early 2007. Moraga Biotechnology reported the discovery of a primitive stem cell with properties that are similar to embryonic cells in adult tissues. The company's scientists found that these adult stem cells were able to differentiate into most tissues and organs of the body. The company says that scientists are able to clone these unique stem cells into various cell lines from a single cell. Since new research points to the possibility that cancers arise as diseases of adult stem cells, the company believes these adult-derived stem cells may be an invaluable research tool for discovering new molecular pathways and drugs for treating and possibly curing many forms of cancer. A study led by Colorado State University researcher Ken Olson shows that mosquitoes can be genetically engineered to be weapons against infectious diseases. Researchers triggered a naturally occurring antiviral pathway in the mosquitoes, allowing the researchers to reduce or prevent the mosquito's ability to contract and transmit the dengue type 2 virus, the cause of dengue fever. The resulting mosquitoes were resistant to the virus and also were fertile, which lends hope to researchers that they could be introduced into wild mosquito populations and have a widespread impact on the spread of the disease. Increased licensing within the biotech industry and between biotech companies and the academic sector, as well as a shift toward relationship-based licensing, seem to be tipping the balance of licensing power in favor of biotech companies, according to a recent report. Over the first 6 months of 2005, biotechnology licensing activity grew by 30% to account for approximately 68% of all licensing agreements signed across the biopharmaceutical industry. The Institute for Systems Biology, ISB, received a 5-year, $16.3 million grant from the NIH for the operation of the NIGMS National Center for Systems Biology. Scientifically, the focus is on using questions in biology to drive the development of technologies and computation, says John Aitchison, Ph.D., which can, in turn, enable new experimentation, interpretation, and insight into complex biological systems. Nick Ox and Merck & Company signed an agreement to collaborate on the development of new antihypertensive drugs using Nick Ox's nitric oxide donating technology. This agreement follows the successful completion of the company's research collaboration, which generated promising results. The agreement covers nitric oxide donating derivatives of several major classes of antihypertensive agents for the treatment of high blood pressure, complications of hypertension, and other cardiovascular and related disorders.
More in-depth coverage of this week's news can be found on www.genengnews.com. Just click on the Sticky Ends online link. Now, here are John Sterling and NASA's Lynn Harper.
Lynn Harper heads integrative studies for the Ames Research Center Space Portal at NASA. That's a consortium to promote commercial space development for the public's benefit. Harper was awarded NASA's Outstanding Leadership Medal for her role as one of the founders of the science of astrobiology and for her service as the first lead for astrobiology advanced concepts and technologies. Lynn, can you give our listeners some examples of successful biotech projects that have been carried out in space and describe what we've learned from those experiments?
I think the experiments that have shown the most promise in space derive from maybe three key features. First of all, this is the story of the only life in the universe we know in its first generations beyond the planet of origin. And The microgravity research has been a constant surprise since the first investigations that were ever conducted. Whether they were conducted on plants or animals or people, what we learned from them have transferred in a number of different ways into the public. Probably the first one in the process was the need to conduct research in space so that astronauts were monitored from Earth. And that ability to do remote monitoring led to the development of the kind of intensive care wards that are in use worldwide today. So there's a whole range of promise in biotechnology that just deals with developing the unique tools to work in the unique environment. The second set deals with the effect of that environment on living systems. And one of the views that was held in the early 1970s was that cells flown in space, single-celled organisms or cell and tissue cultures, would not be affected by the microgravity of the space environment. Now, the cells, who apparently had not read those articles, kept coming back changed. And for years, those were interpreted by the science community to be the result of an experimental artifact, until Tim Hammond of Tulane University in 1998 conducted the first genomic investigation of kidney cells in the space environment. And at the time, 10,000 genes were studied, which at the time was the limit of the technology. And of those 10,000 genes, over 1,600 changed expression in a pattern that had never been seen on Earth, but which were very beneficial to those who were trying to develop tissue cultures for kidney cells and for kidney disease. So when those were followed up with other investigations of tumor cells, of other organ tissues, of plants, and of small animals, they started to show effects that could be exploited for beneficial uses for medical research. And some of this led to the development of the rotating wall vessel, which is now in use by over 19,000 different organizations worldwide, and the number is growing. So a second group of responses deals with the fact that the environment in space is reorganized so that different physical features dominate. And as your readership knows, the value of a cell and tissue culture, if you have a good one for a disease prediction, can accelerate the time to determining the cause of a disease by years and saving millions, maybe even billions of dollars. It can also accelerate the testing of various pharmaceuticals to remediate those diseases, again by years, saving millions to billions of dollars. But the value of the cell and tissue culture depends entirely on how well it mimics what happens in the body. If the responses are not similar to what happens in the body, the results can be misleading. So a good cell and tissue culture is extremely valuable for both commercial and humanitarian reasons. Tissue cultures on Earth of certain organ systems, kidney being among them, other tissues, tumors being among them, are limited by size, because a lot of the cell and tissue culture processes are either grown on a two-dimensional petri dish sort of platform, where you take the cells out of the body, you put them in a petri dish, and the cells communicate. They get information from below, the sides, and the top. By putting them on that type of substrate, you're eliminating the information from one whole level. And this became apparent as an important feature when David Wolf and his colleagues at the Johnson Space Center developed the rotating wall vessel for the purpose of mimicking what happens to cells in space. And over the process of about a decade, it became clear that the type of techniques that they used to mimic the space environment actually were very beneficial to producing high-quality cell and tissue cultures. So then the third area that is very interesting is in novel responses. When we go into space, we enter an environment that life on Earth hasn't encountered in its entire 4+ billion years of evolution on Earth. And it's one of the, gravity is one of the fundamental organizing forces of nature, so that change is very significant. And one of the interesting stories deals with lignin in plants. As you may know, the paper mill companies, the companies that produce paper, spend a great deal of money to do an environmentally responsible remediation of lignin, which is the dominant structural component of plants. So it helps keep the plants upright. So there was an attempt made to do knockouts of the plant products that they use for paper mills to see if they could reduce lignin production. And for those that may not know what knockouts are, they're a series of genetically engineered, in this case plants, where each gene is knocked out. So one gene is knocked out of each one of a series of plants that's grown. So if there's 20,000 genes, you need 20,000 plants. And then, of course, you need the duplicates for statistical validity. So these knockouts were made, and it was determined that lignin production was a very complex process that had more than one combinatorial element. So this made it kind of the worst of all worlds. So if you could find the formula of what genes to knock out or what genes to control to reduce lignin formation, you could produce a series of plants that could produce a high-quality paper product but reduce the burden of lignin. So in this particular case, when you send plants to space, the lignin production goes way down. And with the current genomic analyses techniques and proteomic analyses techniques, you can determine which ones those are and then begin to tailor make the plant processes on Earth. So there's been a number along these lines that are very, very powerful. One of them is by Cheryl Nickerson, also at Tulane University, that studies the infectivity in the organisms that cause food poisoning, the salmonella, that causes food poisoning worldwide. And when she cultured the bacteria, the salmonella species, in a rotating wall vessel as compared to standard culture techniques, and then injected those into a test animal, a mouse that had a traditional 7 to 10 days before dying of the infection. Those grown in the rotating wall vessel, the animal died in actually 3 to 5 days. It was a significant increase in infectivity. And when they began to co-culture in tissue culture types so that both the bacteria and the host cell cultures were co-cultured in the rotating wall vessel, the resulting tissues looked like biopsy tissues. And it was found that the mechanisms of infectivity were different from those that were predicted to increase virulence in the host. So this opened up a whole new realm of investigation for infectious disease and may have important implications for why we're getting so much antibiotic resistance in some of the disease conditions worldwide.
Excellent. Now, Lynn, if somebody, one of my readers or listeners, wants to find out more about this, do they contact you? Who's the contact person, and how do they go about doing that?
They could contact me. I'm at the NASA Ames Research Center, and my email is lharper@mail.arc.nasa.gov. The other alternative would be to look at a place called ACES, the Alliance for Commercial Enterprises in Space, who is working on pulling the whole ecology together. When we looked at what can make commercial space viable, we found that a partnership between biotech, who would be a frequent flyer, and the new entrepreneurial space industry that requires frequent customers would be a natural partnership. So this is an external not-for-profit group that is looking to put all of those pieces together and also to match venture capital funds with the various components. This isn't an endorsement. It's a statement that this organization exists, and to the best of my knowledge, is unique.
And what's their website?
It's Alliance for Commercial Enterprises in Space, a www.alliancespace.net. We ran two workshops, one in June and one in October, to investigate the entrepreneurial paradigm for the ISS, and then in general, the entrepreneurial paradigm for a variety of different industries in space, including the biotech industry. On their website are all of the documentation from those workshops, including the speakers. These were expert speakers who talked about, another one was protein crystallization. I had heard that protein crystallization in space was no longer considered a useful endeavor. Turns out that's not true, that there are a number of crystals that have eluded crystallization on Earth and examination that can be grown in space. So this is another area that becomes important in drug discovery. So all of those documents, and including some of the webcasts, are available through there, as well as a lot of the supporting literature. So ACES probably has the best website hosting the most useful information for those interested in space biotech.
Excellent.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, be sure to visit our website at www.genengnews.com. That's www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm your host, Rob Reese. Thanks again for joining us, and be sure to tune in next week.